Welcome to Great Minds, and this is an extraordinary pleasure today to have Chris James with us. For the last 15 years or so, Chris has been with the Burrito Brothers. The Burrito Brothers are the successor to the iconic Flying Burrito Brothers, which goes back to 1969, an incredible album, The Gilded Palace of Sin. Musicians like Gram Parsons, Chris Hillman of the Byrds, people like Bernie Ledden have touched the Flying Burrito Brothers. And it is almost mythical in many ways. And the influence of the band in many ways transcends the band. And as with many artists, Chris, I love the Temptations. And in one of the conversations I had with the last surviving original member, Otis, he said sometimes the temp and temptation stood for temporary. There were about 25 some odd artists who came through the temps over the years, still going strong today. And the same can be said of the Burrito Brothers, that there's been a lot of folks in and out. The current lineup, which you lead, goes back about 15 years. And we're thrilled to talk to you. So welcome to Chris James.
Well, thank you, Matthew. It's a pleasure to be here, and I appreciate it very much.
Great. So there's a new album together, which we're going to talk about. But let's go back, Chris, and let's start our conversation talking about the great Gram Parsons. A name certainly not lost in history, but belongs up there really in the upper pantheon of all-time greats. And that influence of the Byrds, when you go back and you look at, you know, acts like Tom Petty and so many others, they all revered Gram, revered the Byrds, Chris Hillman, that whole genre and those specific artists. So could we start by talking about the great Gram Parsons?
Sure, that's where it starts, really. And even very much so personally for me, Gram, I just always thought he was wonderful. I thought he was a great singer, just there's so much charm and feeling in his voice, and an interesting musician, to say the least. I think a lot of people don't realize or didn't realize that he's a pretty darn good piano player. I think that's his first instrument. When you read the biographies about him, you find that he played for his mother's little social gatherings. They brought the little boy prodigy out and he played songs on piano. And the famous story of, you know, his entry into the big time, he passed the audition for the Byrds when David Crosby was out and Chris Hillman and Roger McGuinn were reconstituting the Byrds before making the Sweetheart of the Rodeo album. Gram tried out on piano and McGuinn was saying that he thought it would be cool to try a whole different approach, not to try to just replace Crosby, but go down another avenue. And somehow he sort of thought that he was looking for like a jazzy sort of piano player, which I don't think that really quite describes Gram Parsons. But I think he's a far better musician. I mean, capable as a player on an instrument than a lot of people realize. They think of him mostly as that guy standing out strumming the guitar and singing and love his voice and his songs. But I say that when I've seen in interviews and biographies of Gram Parsons that he supposedly faked his way into the Byrds, faked his way on keyboard, that's an insult to Roger McGuinn and Chris Hillman. I just don't believe they're that caliber of musician. They were a long way down that road, and they're not just fooled by some charlatan faking his way in. Gram actually had charisma, charm, and ability that they liked, and he should be given credit for that. And then when we skip forward to how much it meant to my career, in 1985, a guy here in Nashville named Argyle Bell, who unfortunately has passed away quite a few years ago, he began putting on tributes to Gram Parsons. And his reasoning was that this guy deserved a lot more credit than he had gotten so far. It really, even as late after Gram died as 1985, he still wasn't well known. That happened a little bit later. That kind of happened on the heels of this kind of thing that Argyle did in the second half of the 80s. He wanted more people to know who Gram Parsons was. And when he put out feelers for the group to of musicians to back up the various singers who were going to be on that tribute. I auditioned for it. And the first question he asked is, name me five songs Gram Parsons sings. And, oh gosh, that was easy for me. Long time from the get-go, from Sweetheart of the Rodeo, I was following and loving Gram Parsons' work. And so I passed that audition and I was in the stage band. And when the Burrito Brothers came on that night, it was just two guys. They were down to just John Beelan and Gib Gilboe, and they just used the supporting guys who were there that night, which included me. So as of 1985, I was able to include in my resume that I'd played in the Burrito Brothers, which is really a major step for me. And that's thanks to the Gram Parsons tribute.
Amazing. And he was a big personality, spent a lot of time hanging with Mick Jagger and Keith Richards, was a big partier. And
Too much.
at least a little, at least a little bit, and was dismissed from bands including the Byrds, but just a seminal beloved figure. I don't know if you saw the recent documentary about Brian Jones, who really started the Stones. And it was his band, and he died at about 26 years of age. Graham died young, not quite that young, but he was part of a scene, and the Burrito Brothers on that famous Festival Express Rail Tour with Janis Joplin and the Grateful Dead and the band. And it was such a seminal part of so much. Bernie Ledden, who was a bit in the band, later left, was one of the original members of the Eagles. I think Bernie and Tom Ledden, who was in Mudcrutch, just passed. But these were really seminal figures, and the Burrito Brothers and the earliest iteration, the Flying Burrito Brothers, really weave in and out of so many stories. It's almost like a through line through almost all these bands in so many ways.
Think so. I think they were hugely influential. In fact, that's probably the key element of their great legacy, because it's not a bunch of hit songs. It's not, I've often said, the Burrito Brothers for many years now, it's not like you're climbing on board some little gold mine. There's no big laurels here to rest upon. You got to deliver. You got to make another good album and get out there and do a really nice job performing, because there's not a bunch of hits from the bygone days. I mean, sure, there's familiar songs, but there's not a single top 10, I don't think top 40 hit. The closest they ever came to that, I think, is probably Wild Horses, which wasn't released as a single, but was just so famous that it got a lot of airplay.
And what do you think it is about the band? Not a lot of top 10 hits, lots of, personnel in and out. But here we are in 2024. Gilded Palace of Sin came out in 1969, and we're over the moon thrilled to be talking to you as part of the Burrito Brothers. And that legacy just lives on and on and on. What is it, Chris? What is it about the Burrito Brothers that just lives on and on and on?
Well, it's really good. It's a really sincere, soulful hybrid music that those guys, Chris Hillman and Gram Parsons in the first place, introduced, just wanting to chase the dream in their own way and not be a copy. They don't sound like the Byrds, even though they come right out of the Byrds. And even though they didn't have hits, they had impact. Like famously, Keith Richard loved Graham and they were friends. And they played, like you mentioned, Festival Express and all these things. And you got to remember that the time that they first came out of the box was the time of albums, what is it? AOR, Album Oriented Rock. The biggest successes out there weren't based on hit singles for that period of time. It's kind of a decade or so, like a Pink Floyd, Dark Side of the Moon was just mega huge, and it wasn't because of any hit single. It was an album. And other groups like, Led Zeppelin, there's not much in the way of hit singles there. I mean, somebody could refute that and point out a couple, I'm sure, but it was albums that these groups were making. And the Burrito Brothers were very good at making real nice albums. And they somehow fell into this pattern, well, pattern isn't the right word, but path of continuing. And somebody always wanted them to continue, even though some supposedly key member was gone at any given time, they would reconstitute the band and keep going. And there's a really good, beautiful upside to that in that each time the band gets regenerated, reconstituted, there's a need of this new unit, this new chemistry to go out and prove themselves, show that they're worthy of it, and that they're about that they're going to make a great album. And I believe we've done that. I believe every version of the Burritos, ever changing for 55 years, was always good, really good quality musicians with a good view toward making some really fine music. And an interesting fact that goes alongside this is that there's never been an audition. There's not like a vacancy in the group where you put out feelers and say, we need a new guitar player or we need a new drummer. So that's never happened. It's always been a case of when somebody has left or passed away or for whatever reason is no longer in the group, the next guy seems to just be waiting in the wings. I absolutely feel that that's how I got in. I was kind of hanging around the crowd for long enough. Like I mentioned, way back in '86 is when I first started meeting these guys and did four more of those tributes for the next 4 years and ended up doing a lot of different road work with those people. I kind of joined the family in the mid-80s and then finally got my chance to be an actual full member of the group in 2009.
Fantastic story. Like with so many acts that come out of America, often there's a greater appreciation for them in Europe and in particular in the UK. And the Burrito Brothers' legacy in the UK, going back to Graham and Chris Hillman, Bernie Ledden, certainly the times you mentioned with Graham and Keith, notorious, the two of them together, to say the least. To this very day, you could argue that the Burrito Brothers are a bigger deal in the UK than in America. Why do you think they get it in so many ways better than we do?
I don't know. Graham even alluded to that. I've pored through his interviews just because of, for obvious reasons. The guy's so important to the history of this group and all. And he was talking about how he thought that they're more receptive over in Europe. He said the funny thing, sort of the catch 22, you don't find the same amount. I was going to say caliber, and that's probably not true, but the same real source material of musicians over there. They don't tend to learn country and have those southern R&B sensibilities and stuff. There are some very fine, true exceptions to that, but I think it's probably true. And that's my favorite thing about Nashville is that the pool of musicians is just magnificent. It's just the home of many, many great musicians. Too many of them still starving, but many great musicians. And it seems that in the US, everything's a little more splashy. Everything's who's the latest hip hop star? Who's the latest heartthrob? Who's the latest? For years now, the pop music scene hasn't interested me at all. And I know I'm not alone. And it's probably partly just due to my age, that most people have fond memories of the music they loved that they grew up loving. So there's got to be some of that. But boy, I've heard many people support the theory that the right on the heels of the Beatles from the middle of the 60s to the middle of the 70s was an absolute Renaissance era of brilliant talent and wonderful music, the likes of which we haven't seen since.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. Let's talk about something that's been sort of a hallmark of what we can call the Chris James era of the Burritos, and that's taking an unfinished Graham Parsons song and doing something with it. Can we talk about that? And, when something, take us through that process. Is it that you'll find something that's been put down, on tape? Is it something that you found some lyrics? I'm going to guess it's no one way, but take us through that. And it's such a wonderful tribute to Graham.
Yeah, so far, it's been a case of lyrics with us coming up with the music to accompany it. We had access to a lot of lyrics. There was a project I was involved in sometime in the 90s called Graham Parsons Notebook, which his buddy John Nuys from the International Submarine Band, who I got to know Well, and he had this notebook, and a guy here in Nashville named Mike Ward spearheaded a project to complete lyrics out of it into songs and some other sources. I've had my hands on some really pretty nice Graham Parsons lyrics. And so we would get together with the other guys in the band, and all of us get together and hash out how we thought these could best be chased as songs on their own. And usually we've got a pretty solid concept. I think, not wanting to be conceited or egotistical, but I tend to be the leader, the lead the way in the last, most of the last 10 years or so. But it was a not a power play. It was just that the guys leaned toward me to do that, and then they love climbing on board and getting it done. And so what I would tend to offer is the idea of where I think we ought to go, or at least a suggestion of where we could go with the music. And it's turned out to be some pretty workable ideas. Like, for instance, the one called Between Your Hands and Mine, which is just a gorgeous lyric, and it just sounded so folk music. People who follow Graham know that he started out as a folky. And we went through this idea based on the song Boy from the Country, written by Boomer Castleman and Michael Murphy, that Mr. Hyde did, and loved the flow of that, the finger picking and all. And so we went there with that. Then we thought on the one called, what's it called? On the Notorious Burrito Brothers, on this Sometimes You Just Can't Win. Which was also Graham borrowing from Fred Neil in his lyric. But we thought, what about the Stones? Graham famously was friends with Keith Richard. Let's make that track sound like the Stones, and modeled it after that with Graham's lyric. And then the most recent one, the one here on Together, which is Mr. Customs Man, which is a very sort of dated lyric along the lines of Arlo Guthrie's Coming into Los Angeles, Don't Touch My Bags, If You Please, Mr. Customs Man, is obviously not the way you can deal with a customs man nowadays after 9/11 and all that. But Graham's being kind of harassed for having long hair and fancy rocker clothes. And he's asking the customs man to leave him alone because he's innocent. That's essentially the lyric. We're listening to of all things, the early Quicksilver Messenger Service. And we really loved some of their grooves and thought, well, the burritos always have been a hybrid. The idea of taking one of those rocking psychedelic vibe things and having pedal steel guitar as the featured instrument and burrito style vocals, it appealed to us. It seemed like a neat place to go. So that's what we've done so far. But when you first said this, it kind of gave me a start, because we're thinking of getting a Graham Parsons vocal incorporated into a recording. So that's a plan to see how well that works out. It was triggered by the Beatles doing Now and Then and taking a John Lennon vocal that was nothing more than a rough cassette recording. And the technology today is good enough to isolate that, EQ it, and fix it enough to be workable to record around it, record a whole new track using that as the lead vocal. And there's some Graham Parsons loose ends on bootlegs and things that are exactly that. They're just rough recordings on cassette. And you'd never believe that they could be fixed up to sound that good, but I think they can. And so it's a slippery slope, though, because we love Graham dearly. And I think it would be super cool to hear what amounts to sounding like a brand new Graham Parsons song. I also think all the fans, except for just a few, and maybe they're not fans, would love it. People adore Graham. There's certain to be some curmudgeons who insist that it's blasphemy. How dare we do it? But I really don't care. I want to do it. It's like stir up the pot a little, see if we can get some attention.
I think you're right, and the technology is there to do that. And I love the idea. And you saw what Peter Jackson did with the Beatles films, and what Sir Giles Martin has done out of Abbey Road. That technology, that stuff, all that technology. Yeah, that they can do that. Fantastic. So, as happens in life, and as happens in bands, people come in and out, and some people we lose completely. We've talked about some of them, but in the more recent iteration of the band, you lost Bob Hatter, And I know Steve Allen came in. But talk about that, Chris. You're still standing. And that's got to be a unique place to be on the mountain, you know, still standing there looking down, and in some cases looking up at some of your, you know, fallen brothers. It's got to be create some really interesting reflective moments for you.
It does. It's, you know, bittersweet is the correct term, probably, because it's both. It's sad and cool. Because when Bob contracted cancer, and it was right during the, he had already been a survivor some 10 years prior, but right during that worst portion of the pandemic was when it hit him again, which was just horrible and bad timing, because, you know, you worry about your immunity system and things like that. And so Bob was just totally hesitant to in any way get out in public. You know, had that pandemic not been going on, he probably could have worked with us somewhat, and we'd cater to his needs and not push him. But, you know, you've seen guys who are going through chemo and they don't quit on their life. So it was that pandemic that just stopped everything. And then by the time it started easing up, poor Bob was too far gone. He was not winning the battle, to say the least. But we had, before that pandemic and before he got his new horrible diagnosis, had already begun working on this album, in as much as how we always start with writing sessions together and demoing the songs and making sure we have some form of reference that we will then take into the studio when we're ready to start knocking them out as a full album studio recording. So the whole thing was conceived and figured out and planned, and with Bob on hand. And I've always said that even though Steve Allen came in and did the job in the studio that Bob couldn't do, it's the same album we would have made had Bob lived. And Steve, so cool, so graciously said that he first wanted to get Bob's blessing before he would consider doing it. He wanted to talk with Bob and say, is this something you'd be good with? Would you? And Bob, I can understand. I'm pretty sure I would say that. How nice of a guy to come in and see your recent dream through. You know, okay, he didn't want to see the whole thing go down in flames. And so we obviously owe a big debt to Bob. He's a brilliant guitar player, as fine as I've ever known. And we dedicate the album to him. And then Steve Allen, so sweetly and with so much humility, didn't require any big credit. We listed one last time Bob Hatter as the fourth member of the band. And then Steve got a special credit inside in the credits with a picture. No other guest on the, because he was special guest, to say the least. And now he liked it so much, and he's agreed that whatever we do next, he's on board with. So we've got our chemistry back. We really like just this four piece at this point in time, because it's the old saying, too many cooks spoil the broth, spoil the brew. And we all just see it eye to eye. We work real efficiently and pleasantly together. And I can say part of the reason there have been so many personnel changes through the years is sometimes that not being the case, you know, I mean, duh, obviously. So it's really cool. We've got this chemistry now that we like very much.
That's fantastic. Can we talk a little bit more about the Together record? You were just talking about it in terms of, you know, Bob passing the torch so elegantly and Steve accepting it so graciously. But it's such a terrific album and stands right up alongside the pantheon of all the great Flying Burrito and Burrito Brothers records. But take us inside the Together album.
Thank you for saying that. I do believe that, but it's nice to hear you say that or anyone else, because, you know, it's like the whole reason that we hooked up with Bob Boiling in England. He's our representative over there who got us our record deal. When we were making friends and I could tell he was an astute businessman, I asked him if he'd consider pitching us, because for me to contact labels and people and say, we're great, you should love us, you know, it just isn't the same as an outside observer who feels that, who's been impressed. And so it really means a lot for you to say that. But now back to your question, the album is meant like I alluded to in the earlier portion of this interview, to be an album. It's an excursion from point A to point end, and it's meant to be checked out that way. It's not just a random collection of songs. It very much has a grand finale. We've got a 15-plus minute suite on the end. And I don't think that thing gets boring at any point because it's not 15 minutes of jamming or anything. It's 15 minutes of completely cohesive, organized, figured out different songs tied together, you know. And like the ultimate ideal of that was side two of Abbey Road by the Beatles. It's something like that. It's a 15 minute journey through a bunch of music, well done music. And the song starts with our. Sort of feels like, you know, the old school started with the thing that seems most like a hit or most like a catchy, grab you right off the bat kind of thing with Ms. Misery, which was written with Bob Hatter and is one of the few examples on the album of Bob playing the lead guitar. It's amazing how it's not super noticeable, the difference. Bob and Steve really just interchanged beautifully. I don't know where to go next about describing the album as a cohesive piece. I guess I could say the title was thought of. We always want our title to have some kind of inner meaning to us. And for me, I was thinking of how when the 1969, when the first archival stuff came out from LA regarding the birds, like most specifically the pre-flight. It was on this label, small label called Together Records. And I think of us as being in the birds' extended family, I mean, for obvious reasons. And Together was about that. So I attached that meaning in my mind. Plus, I thought that we, like I said, the cohesiveness of the group, the chemistry that we now have is so together. And I liked what our buddy Bob Boyling in England said. He goes, "You're chasing the muse. You're out to get her," which is to get her, which is those words, those letters. Oh, and by the way, it's kind of curious that Bob Boyling's name has initials of BB, just like the Burrito Brothers.
Exactly. That is a coincidence. Well, it's a fantastic record, and that you have kept the Burrito Brothers alive, still as a working group, recording, hoping to play some gigs this year over in the UK. And I know you guys get together and play every once in a while in Nashville, which is just such a great town. It's one of the great stories in music, in American music, the pantheon of artists who have come through. The Doors of the Burrito Brothers is second to none. And Chris, you are doing incredible yeoman's work and really important work to keep that flame burning. And the music world and all fans of great music everywhere are better for it. And I can't thank you enough for doing this. This was an absolute joy to get a chance to spend some time with you.
Thank you so much, Matthew. It's been my pleasure, and it's really kind of you to do this.
All right. We'll stay in touch, man.